Jeff Walton took his training in the Radio College of Canada's Electronics Engineering Technologist program back in the 80s when music was awesome. What? Yeah, jeez. Jeff has performed component level repair, field installation and service, technical support and quality assurance roles with various companies and has been with Nautel for about 33 years, the first 17 of which were spent in field service and technical support positions, as well as assisting with design review of new products and improvements of existing systems. Awarded the SBE Educator of the Year Award in 2018 and the Association of Public Radio Engineers Achievement Award in 2019 and the NAB Engineering Achievement Award in 2020, he's not showing off at all. Jeff performs several presentations every year. We love him. He has topics on lightning protection, grounding, transmitter site safety, IT security, and various other subjects of interest in the broadcasting engineering field. He also served two terms on the WBA Board of Directors. He's a friend to everyone. We love him. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Walton.
So I'm standing here, and I'm looking at the mic, at the quick grip that's holding it to the stand, thinking I better not wave anything around too hard. Thanks for that, Chris. Holy smokes, that was better than anything I could have written, and probably a little more modest. On the lunch, he was talking about lunch earlier, so I said what we should do next year for lunch. We'll do poutine for the main course. We'll do Kringle for dessert and Tim Hortons coffee to wash it all down. You know. Well, of course a nap. Oh, and old fashions, you know, for just to keep us all going. So topic AM radio. And somebody's like, might have been Chris, might have been Linda, I can't remember who's like, make it sexy. It's like, it's AM radio. My grandparents used to listen to AM radio, and the grandparents are sexy, and I immediately lost track. But there are some cool things that have happened. I mean, how many people, we had this conversation, so we're going to bring back that lunchtime conversation a little. How many people remember AM radios with tubes, or AM receivers, not transmitters here? Yeah, a lot. I've still got one in my house. And they had a really cool sound to them. But it wasn't necessarily the sound quality that brought us in, it was the content, right? I mean, there was somebody talking to us about stuff that interested us. I'll give you an example. So last night, apparently there was some sports ball event. The wrong team won. And several of us were over, there's a sports bar about a mile up the road. Actually, we're in Wisconsin. There's probably about 40 sports bars a mile up the road. But we're at this sports bar watching this, and I had to run to the airport to pick up somebody who shall remain nameless, but better be in this room, because if he isn't, I won't be able to growl at him later. There he is, back in the corner. So I get in the car. Well, this was at halftime, before the game really sucked. And and so I get in the car, and it's like, damn, it's 20 minutes to the airport, and the game's pretty good. So I start dialing through the radio in the Durango that I'm renting. I found an AM station with the Packers game on it. It was not on any of the FM stations I could find. Now, maybe that's on me for not spending enough time searching, but I listened to the Packers game on AM, and it sounded all right. So, what's changed with AM on the transmitter side end? Well, one of the biggest things has been the power bill. I mean, if you looked at a tube transmitter, on average, you were looking in the range of, say, 40-45% AC to RF efficiency, 75-80% plate efficiency with a lot of power supply loss. And that's a lot of electricity. Now, when electricity was 5 cents a kilowatt hour, not a big deal. These days, electricity can be a little more pricey depending on your market. I've got some TVA down Kirk's neck of the woods. You can still get commercial rates down in the 7-8 cents a kilowatt hour range. 11, he says. Well, there you go. That's how outdated I am, see? And there are others where it's up way high. They're up past 25 cents a kilowatt hour in New York. Alaska, don't even go there. Hawaii, up past 50 cents a kilowatt hour. At that point, everything you can do to drop the power bill becomes critical. Well, transmitter efficiency was one of the things that changed a lot. It's an engineering session, so we're going to talk math and stuff. Not too much of it, because we've only got 40 minutes and 40 seconds, not that I'm counting. I did a session in Nebraska a month or so ago, and we ran long, way long. But they didn't have a stopwatch in front of me, so note to self, Matt, get a stopwatch for me for next year. But the amplifier classes have changed. Originally was linear amplifiers, typically in the 30 to 40% range, depending on the class. Class A, if you get to class B, you're a little higher. When we get up to class D, and these are the DC efficiencies of the amplifier, all right? This is not the transmitter efficiency. Remember that transmitter efficiency also involves cooling system losses. If you've got a squirrel cage blower, it's going to consume a lot more than a couple of muffin fans. All right, if you've got a big iron plate transformer, that's going to lose more heat, and which is wasted power, than switching supplies, typically. Not always, but typically. All right, so that's something else to think about. So currently, on a solid-state transmitter, and I'm not differentiating between its the mothership or any of the others out there, currently, you're going to be between 85 and 90% overall efficiency, AC to RF. We're only wasting 10 to 15% of the power consumed as heat. The rest is going up the antenna. Okay, so that's a huge change from the days of yore. I always wanted to say that expression, the days of yore. The worst part is the days of yore, I was alive for them. And a lot of us were. And that was the other part of the conversation at the lunch break, is finding the folks that weren't alive in the days of yore so they can create their own. So as we go up in the amplifier classes, we do go up in efficiency. And this is, how many SBE members in the room? Yay, nice. So as part of the RF for IT course that we're doing, Gary Cavell and I got tasked with doing it. It's an 8-part series on RF for IT-oriented folks. We started with Ohm's Law, and that was Mark Person's suggestion right there in the front row, because he and I have talked about this several times. And it went through filter theory, it went through amplifier theory, and now we're starting to pull it together into transmitter systems. Anyway, if you're an SBE member plus member, the first 4 sessions of that are archived. And I mean, not to toot my own horn, because there were people smarter than me involved, so I think it's pretty good. If it was just me, maybe not so much. So as we get into the amplifiers, the Class D amplifiers become switches. On, off. There's not a lot of waste between on and off, okay? Not like when you're running linear, when you're generating as much heat. And this isn't critical for any real reason, except to remember a couple of things. When we add AM stereo, we're adding a frequency modulation component. When we add HD radio, we're doing the same thing. When we add anything else, it can change, so you do need to pay attention to that. At the top, you see B plus VDC, okay, power supply. Well, if you take that amplifier and just amplify it at the carrier frequency, it's going to go to the power supply this way, to the power supply that way, because it's a push-pull amplifier. If you put your audio signal as the power supply, that's how much it's going to amplify, and that's how we create AM in a nutshell. Now we have to do a lot of filtering, because we also generate a lot of crap, because this is all square waves. You're recording this. I'm going to have to watch my language. Too late. Yeah, square waves. Square waves are bad. In audio, in RF, not so much. So that's something to, again, be aware of, that we are creating square waves. We are going to have to filter things, and how we filter. So square waves, anybody know the harmonics that are typical in a square wave? Odd order, so third, fifth. Now, on a linear amplifier, all of them, On a linear amplifier, you tend to have even order harmonics. That's why tubes tend to have the warm sound. They have more even order harmonics as opposed to the odd order, which is a little harsher. And this is perceptual. This would require somebody with more audio knowledge like Kirk over there, who's busy on his phone updating Facebook. But Bill's going to help him. See, this is what we do the closed captioning for, so there's a written record as well as the recording. So things have changed a lot over the years, but the overall concept AM is the same. You have an audio signal, you have a carrier signal, you mix the two together, and you get an output. Pretty cool. How many people have built a crystal radio receiver in their life, or a cat whisker receiver? So this is probably what got me in front of this microphone today. For my 7th birthday, I got a Radio Shack home electronics kit. Does anybody remember those? It was like the predecessor to the breadboard where you had the little box with the little metal clips and you put your resistors and stuff between the metal clips. And occasionally smoke came out. I discovered something. If you removed the 9-volt battery that powered that little box and connected it to a barbed wire fence controller or an electric fence controller, very entertaining things happened. That's a total side note. I think I maybe invented the spark transmitter, arc transmitter at that point. Point being, again, the technology hasn't changed. The downside to AM overall is it does tend to be inefficient. You put a massive amount of energy into the carrier, and there is virtually no information except the carrier signal that you need to tell the receiver that there's a signal there. Other than that, we're dumping up to 66% of our power, two-thirds of our power, into the part that there's no information transmitted on. That's not so cool. So this is where MDCL came about, and MDCL has been around for years. I'm going to screw it up because I get it wrong every time. Modulation dependent carrier level. Dan said I got it right, yay. I always go with limiting is what I think it should be. So MDCL has been around. Hams have been using it for years. Brown Boveri did a version of it in an AM transmitter in the 80s with tubes. You know, this doesn't require the newest, fanciest solid state. So it has been around for a bit. In 2010, Alaska Public Radio got its experimental license to do it, and we lit up one of our XL12s and a Gates Air DX10 with MDCL in Barrow, the northernmost populated town in North America. And got all kinds of stories about delivering transmitters when you can only build an ice bridge out to the transmitter site on an ice floe over a period of about 2 weeks in the winter. It makes for some really interesting backstories. That's also the first time I had a transmitter site fire. You know what it was? Totally non-related to AM. Loose connection in an electrical outlet. You remember all these times I come up here and we talk safety and I talk maintenance and I always show my little FLIR 1 and say, y'all need to get one? How many people do not have a FLIR 1 or some sort of infrared camera yet? Y'all need to get one. All right. Arguably the best tool in my toolbox. I can vouch for having stopped 3 transmitter site fires from happening because of it. And $250 delivered. You can get cheaper ones on Amazon. So anyway, totally not related to AM, but just a note. Okay, marketing put that in. That's as close as I'm going to get to a sales pitch. The only thing that I want to mention, the MDCL, and Mark and I had this conversation earlier, because there are not misconceptions so much, but there are various algorithms for MDCL. Okay, the most common one we use, and I'll hit on it shortly. Oh, more marketing stuff. AMC, amplitude modulation compounding. On AMC, the peak transmitter, the carrier power, is reduced on modulation peaks. Okay. DAM, dynamic amplitude modulation, on that one, the carrier power is reduced during troughs. Let's back up a little and take a look at that AM waveform. Now, think about this for a second. If you reduce your carrier power when there is little to no modulation, you're effectively bringing the signal, the coverage, in, right? More power means goes further. Less power comes in, less distance. So you're going to have a bigger impact on fringe coverage and the signal to noise at your fringe with that type of algorithm. And that's important to remember, because the AMC is what almost everybody in North America is kind of standardized on. And again, there's no free lunch. We are quite literally reducing peak power. You reduce peak power, you're going to impact coverage to some extent. Now, how many people have heard the saying, you cover the last 10% of your audience with the last 90% of your power? Okay. Everybody knows the square law of power. You reduce your power by half, how much does it impact your coverage? Not a lot, typically. Now, if you're in a very population-dense area like LA, that might be an issue, because there could be several hundred thousand or a million people in that little bit of space. If I'm in Madison, where once I get outside of the town proper and the suburbs, there's a fair bit of fields and not a fair amount of population, that could be more attractive. So something to think about. Okay, back to where I was. This is one of the other things that made it important. MDCL historically has created a lot of noise, partly because our sample rates for the audio were so low relative to the carrier. So adding a lot more samples really gave us a much cleaner reproduced signal. So it's something else to remember. And computers, think about this for a second. So we are dynamically adjusting both audio and power. And if I can do that with software, it's a whole lot cleaner. There's no delay. It's faster. It works much more efficiently. So it's something else to think about. So again, yeah, we adjust carrier and modulation. And in the AMC mode, the one that I'll probably focus on the most because that's what we mostly use in this continent, you decrease them as you increase. Well, you have to decrease your audio level, otherwise you end up overshooting the audio because we've reduced the carrier, right? So 100% modulation, say my audio is 3 dB. Let's say 3 volts. Volts is easier to work with for me. So if my carrier's at 1.5 volts and my audio goes up to 3 volts, that's 100% modulation because it'll go up 3 down to 0. If I reduce my carrier to a half of that, to say 3/4 of a volt, then I've got to reduce my audio from 3 volts to 1.5 to keep that same 100% modulation. Mark's sitting at me going, that was the worst way I've ever heard that explained. It's easier if I could draw a picture. But yeah, so we're dynamically adjusting both carrier and audio. Okay, and during quiet forms with AMC on the modulation troughs, we crank the power level up to get the receivers awake so they know you're there. Okay, so that's the basic concept of it. How it works? Pretty easy. As the modulation and the power get cranked up, we increase the algorithm to bring the peak down, and the power bill goes with it. That's the short explanation. There's math. There's lots of pictures. We've done massive amounts of field testing. Is Mike Pappas in the room anywhere? Still? Don't see him? Okay. So Mike and I and a whole bunch of other folks ended up wandering through a bunch of fields in Boise, Idaho in 2019. And we took, I think we had at the end of it about 7,000 line items of data. I mean, there were pages and pages and pages of measurements. We were measuring current draw. We were measuring field strength. We were measuring signal level. We were measuring everything. And started playing with the different algorithms. And we discovered that with the 6 dB attenuation, we're dropping the power bill by roughly 3/4. Now that's the kind of math anybody can understand. If you've got a power bill on a 50 kilowatt AM in a high power rate area of about $8,000 a month, dropping that by $6,000, that's a noticeable chunk of change. All right, so the one thing I will caveat, again, there's no free lunch. We are reducing power level. So that will have an impact on fringes. All right, but it is something to be aware of. And I say the big brag is 75%. I'm a little more conservative. I think you can cut your power bill by 30, 40%. And it doesn't have to be one of our boxes. You can put it on a DX10. I don't know if BE's doing anything with MDCL, but there may be. So again, talk to your manufacturer, see what's out there. Now, the ones we've got, zero listener complaints, I'm cynical. Remember what I started off with? Depends on the content. If you got no listeners, none of them are going to complain. So this is all kind of relative, right? I mean, I like to work stuff like this on a call-in thing. Hey, call in if you notice any difference. Hey, call in if you're listening. We'll send you a t-shirt. Buy a couple of 100,000 or a couple of t-shirts, whatever, depending how many people you think are listening. We do have a calculator on our website if you've got an AM. And I think, yes, we probably do. We don't track that one, so we don't even cookie-ize you, so we can't tell you, listen. But you can go in and do the math yourself and figure out about what you would be looking at based on your own power bill and TPO. So just something to think about. All right, so that's MDCL. I wasn't going to teach the course on it because that's already been done ad nauseum. One other thing about MDCL, so you remember, we're reducing peak power based on carrier and modulation. So the harder you drive the modulation, the more you're going to reduce your peaks. The more constantly you drive the modulation, so the more modulation density you've got, when you get that point, that way you tend to see more of a stable, I guess, reduction. So you're not like at the fringe is going to see as much in and out and in and out. But that free lunch thing again. Little thing called dynamic range. You can run with half a dB of dynamic range. Should you? That's not my decision. I've listened to New York radio on FM, and it hurts. So again, judgment call based on your specific format, your specific power bill, your power, your modulation, your management. There's a lot of things that come into play, all right? It's a solution, it may help, but it's good to be aware of it. So now we got all digital AM. This is where David's sitting back there going, hey, I know a little bit about this slide. You should, it's his. I stole some of your slide decks, David. So am I. The good thing is the techno, yeah, I know, it doesn't even say pilot, it's that old. So back in, and the reason I brought this, because it's got a Wisconsin tie-in. Back in 2015, I'm standing outside the three towers for WDGY in Hudson, Wisconsin, while David and half a dozen other people are driving all over Minnesota and Wisconsin measuring field strength. And every 15 to 30 seconds, somebody will text me and go, turn it on, turn it off, go to hybrid for roughly 3 days. We did that at several different sites over the course of a while, so that was a whole lot of fun. The reason we brought it up, and these numbers are also old, but they haven't changed a lot. There's been a few AMs shut down. We're in the ballpark. There's a lot of broadcasters still running AM, and this is really cool. Oh, look at that. There's even fancy animations. Now I know it's David's slide because I don't do that stuff. The downside is that all digital doesn't come in on an analog-only receiver. There are some hybrid receivers that won't pick in all digital signal up. So before you just go jumping into it, you need to be aware of that. One other downside that isn't anywhere in this slide deck, who would you be most inclined to consider an all-digital experiment on, your 50-kilowatt moneymaker or the little 1-kilowatt that you got tucked over to the side in a small market? Todd, you run some of those. What would you pick? The little one, most likely? At this moment, nobody, and I mean nobody, and this is where you all come in because we build stuff when y'all ask for it, nobody makes a 1-kilowatt transmitter on AM that'll run all-digital. Nobody, not even us. Okay? That needs to be changed, but if nobody's asking for it, so something to think about. Okay? All digital is kind of, sort of, halfway authorized. I mean, you can get an experimental license to run all digital now. Yes, David, is it? Okay, well, there you go. So why does this slide that was dated 2020 say no?
It was October.
This is probably cop. Oh, there, look. Now we give them a mic.
No, it was authorized. Any AM station can go all digital. They just have to notify the FCC.
So did you do your paper earlier today?
Did you?
You're doing a presentation.
I did one this morning, yeah.
There you go. So everybody's met David Layer. David's the guy that, Alex has got his hand up. It's all gone.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
There is one interesting thing that I would say about all digital, and it's something we're looking into. We're trying to figure out whether it would be useful for a broadcaster to be able to do all digital during parts of the day.
Yep.
So, for example, you could broadcast your analog signal during drive time, and then in mid-afternoon and the evening, you could broadcast in all digital and hopefully train listeners to understand the benefits. And
right.
There's only a handful of stations that have gone all digital, but in each case, they've had FM translators. So they're not fully disenfranchising their listeners who don't have digital radios. They can pick up the signal on the FM if they're within the coverage area of the translator. So,
right. Over just, and above that, I've got a couple of customers. Actually, Brian Walsh in Indiana now is looking at doing hybrid during the day, so AM plus HD, and then all digital at night as a test. So, Bill, I'm going to make you to run over to Alex. Never mind. It's already been covered. Steve got it.
When I worked at Nautel, I helped a station down in Florida turn on a diplex all-digital AM. One of the caveats, too, to going to all-digital with the FCC rules is you have a 30-day notification period. You have to air on the air that's saying you're going to do it. I'd be interested to hear, probably offline here with David, what that hybrid model would do with that ruling.
That's actually one of the impediments, because we've talked to the FCC about that, and nothing has, I mean, if a broadcaster wanted to try that, I think they could get an experimental authorization to do it, to turn it on and off, you know, a couple times a day. But you're right, and that's one of the impediments, is you couldn't do something like that if you had to do 30-day notification each time. That's right. Silly.
That's not to say you wouldn't have to do the 30-day notification before you started doing it.
No, that's a good idea, I think, and that's just with that one time, but to be able to toggle it back and forth, it would seem to be inconsistent with the way the rule's currently written.
Right. So it's definitely something that is still in the very early days. But from the concept, so my Dodge Dakota, or Durango, the one I'm renting this trip, actually has an HD receiver in it. So it's one that I could theoretically pick up all digital or hybrid if there was any around there. So there was a bunch of people involved in this. And the reason I skipped past all that stuff to get to this part. So this is where it gets critical. So if we look at an analog AM signal, this is your basic spectrum analyzer picture of an analog AM signal. You know, you got a nominal 10 kilohertz bandwidth, and we got all the cool stuff with LED traffic lights and cell phone chargers and laptop chargers. And the fact that the noise floor has gone up 20 to 30 dB, and if only there was an organized body that was charged with enforcing rules on interference from power lines and stuff like that. I'm not mentioning any three-letter acronyms at this point. And then it's not David's acronym, so you're free and clear on that. But yeah, that's that horse is already way far out of the barn. The noise floor is there. There's nothing we can do to change it. So we pretty much have to work with it. Well, the hybrid HD came out, and everybody remembers the in-band adjacent channel and in-band other people's channel jokes, right? But it's true. Now, granted, the HD carriers are down several dB. Every 10 dB is a decimal point, so 1% or less. It's several orders of magnitude down there. But it is going to create some more adjacent channel interference. And when you've got a lot of stations crammed into a market, that's an issue. Shoot, at nighttime, it's an issue even without that because of this funny propagation thing that AM does so well at night, which is one of the things that makes it awesome. So with all digital, we go back to our 10 kilohertz bandwidth. Now, there's still some power density questions, and I've had this argument here and there, but again, we're several orders of magnitude further down again, and we're back within the 10 kilohertz bandwidth. So you don't have the adjacent channel interference issues. You don't have the noise floor issues. You can get the signal or you can't get the signal, but there's not a whole lot of static. If you don't get it, you don't get it. It's there, it's not. Anybody ever heard an HD radio on FM? Few? And when you get it, it's there. When you don't get it, it's not there. There is no in between. Now, that on its own is beneficial. I mean, just think about being able to listen to AM with some decent fidelity and no background static. You know, now, is that the solution over AM stereo, which we also build into our transmitters? I don't know. That's up to y'all to decide. Okay, but the point is we can provide the tools to do it. Oh, look, another old slide. David remembers this slide too. When I said we went to a lot of different markets and somebody stood outside the transmitter for days, turn it on, turn it off, go to hybrid, turn it on, turn it off, raise the power, lower the power. Why is the smoke coming off the tower? No, I don't think we ever had that conversation. There were a lot of tests, an awful lot. And David's team, they were trying to get as many possible situations, day patterns, night patterns, directionals, non-Ds, high power, low power. I mean, AM more than FM has got a lot of variables thrown in. FM, it's directional, it's non-directional, it's on or it's off. That's pretty much your choices. You know, so that is something else that really needed to be quantified a lot more. And I mean, this is old news. This is going back 9-10 years. But the MA3, here's another little side note. So thinking about the HD radio in general, does anybody know off the top of your head when FM passed AM for listenership in the US? 75. Very close, 76. It's like he was in this industry for a while and knew it. Yeah, so 1976. Now I dealt with a station in Mississippi a while ago, built the first FM station in Mississippi in 1951, and he couldn't talk the local car dealers into installing an FM receiver in a car because that newfangled stuff will never catch on. 25 years later, it did. So looking at that time lapse, we're not out of that 25-year period yet. Now, whether it works or not, it's really more up to us. Actually, it's not up to us. It's up to the people that put the content on the air, because if there's nothing people want to hear, why are they going to buy a receiver to go listen to it? You know, it's like me last night searching the radio dial till I found that Packers game, and it was on static AM, but it was there. Now, if I'd found it on FM, I would have been over there. You know, I mean, it was content I wanted to hear, and that's what I went looking for. And that's the thing we need to figure out a way to take back to management. Put the stuff they want to hear, they'll do what they got to do to hear it. So there was a massive amount of data. Again, HD, MA3, and these are the two big things for AM that have the potential, more than anything, to revitalize it. I mean, putting AM on FM, what's the benefit? I mean, we're crowding an already overcrowded FM band. We don't gain anything, really, except we add translators. How much protection does a translator have against the full power? Exactly none. So what happens if somebody finds a way to squeeze a full power into a market where I've got a translator on my AM? Bye-bye is the exact word. All right. On the other hand, if my AM's running MA3, all digital, it's already in its protected band. It's covered. It's licensed. It's there. The receivers, by and large, are getting to be out there. Like I said, this Durango has got an HD receiver. It's probably one of the first rentals I've had with the HD turned on in a while. My 2018 Silverado has HD, but the 2020 Silverados did not. Couldn't get the chip. There's some virus thing or something going around that seemed to interfere with a lot of people's lives for a while. So we've done a lot of testing. I forgot, I'm anchored, I can't wander. A lot of testing on this stuff. And from a technological aspect, there's just no argument anymore. I mean, the technology works. We know it works. Whether it's MDCL, whether it's MA3, we can make AM sound good, we can make it go far, and we can do it cheaply. Less cost on the power. So the question then becomes, can we find a way to sell it to the station owners? And can we put program on it that people want to hear? That, I think, is probably the biggest question. I just came back from South Dakota where I taught a transmitter to stop blowing up, which was, that was my sales training for the year. I taught a transmitter how not to blow up. The best highlight of my trip. Well, the highlight was when it stopped going boom while I was had my head in it. But that station shows up on the ratings. Now, Pierre, South Dakota is not really a high, like, we're not talking Chicago or New York or LA or anything like that. But I was in half a dozen stores over 3 days, and every single one of them had that station on the radio in the store. They're playing oldies. Music on AM, what a concept. Now, actually, they're playing oldies in the afternoon, they're playing farm reports in the morning. Because, well, in that market, that's what you need to hear. So they have, again, content people want to listen to. And that's, I think, one of our biggest challenges. So thanks to Greg Borg and Rest His Soul, because he did volunteer a station for us to play with for several days. And we ran around and did a whole lot of stuff. Oh, look. I got to be the one taking the picture. So yeah, there were a bunch. Now, the other thing about MA3, if you look at the hybrid coverage even, so MA1 versus MA3, is you look over toward the 694, 494 loop to the northwest of Minneapolis, they were getting pretty spotty. In MA3, that went away. And again, David's just sitting there going, man, this is old data, but the numbers don't change. You know, if you look at what WWFD did in Maryland, that's also working. You know, this is something that can actually improve your coverage. Like, if you're looking, there's solid coverage out to the 2 millivolts. WWFD is seeing, Dave Kolesar said they were out to the 1 millivolt in some cases with decent coverage. You're not getting an analog signal to go out that far with the signal noise level the way it is these days. So on its own, that's pretty cool. And if you're into AM at all, that's something to think about. Okay, again, with the daytime coverage, MA3 mode. I thought I had the hybrid one. I'm sorry about that. Now, there are some challenges. MA3 is power dense. It requires, as I said, with the MDCL, it requires a pretty high sample rate to get a clean signal. The mass correction was a lot more critical because of the power density. And power measurement. This works for both MDCL and MA3, where we've got a high density amplitude component and a frequency modulated component on one, and just a lot of power and current carrier variation. You can't plug in a conventional power meter and expect it. If you turn MDCL on, your power meter is going to bounce all over the place. Now, there is work being done to try to change that, and you'll hear about it at next NAB, not from us, from somebody else, and I promised them I wouldn't let the cat out of the bag, so just keep an eye out next NAB for MDCL power metering. But the way you do it, like with MDCL, you have to turn the MDCL off at the moment to get an accurate power measurement. Okay, and that's important to remember. How many people remember AM stereo? I'm going to say I know Mark remembers AM stereo. But again, that was one of those things. You remember optimizing your antenna system? So you'd set the AM stereo up for daytime, then you'd set it up for nighttime, then you'd pick the compromise that sucked least on both. Well, with the MA1, we ended up doing that because, again, the antenna bandwidth. With the MA3, because we're back into the 10 kilohertz, that's less a concern. Now, having said that, the same caveat that is applied to AM forever that everybody seems to have forgotten, it's the antenna system, stupid. If your antenna is narrow band and off tune, it's going to sound like crap. Okay, you can take the best Macintosh amplifier out there, and if you put it into a set of $10 Walmart speakers, it's going to sound like crap. Well, a poorly tuned or maintained AM antenna system will sound bad. You need the bandwidth, you need the phase shift to be correct, and that doesn't matter whether you're mono, stereo, MA3, MA1, or analog. That's something that we have really gotten away from. We need to get back to. Okay, so check your bandwidth. Part of it's because when you start shoehorning a bunch of signals in, trying to make them fit with Rorschach blot patterns, you cannot make a high bandwidth antenna system. You're getting what you're getting, and you're going to live with it and like it. And again, I don't know the solution to that, but it's something you need to pay attention to. Okay, now on MA3, similar to TV, how many TV folks in the room? Couple? So y'all are familiar with MER, modulation error ratio. When you get into a digital AM signal, the same thing applies. Okay, we can look at the splatter, and we can tell just from the vectors whether we're in signal or whether we're going to go out or not. Okay, the closer we get, the better we get the MER, the farther it goes. Like TV, MER, better it is, better coverage. Okay, so that's something else. The difference between AM and FM and TV these days is really getting smaller. They've got pictures, we've got pictures. They've got AM and FM, we've got AM and FM in the same transmitter. Okay, the technologies are really starting to merge in a lot of regards. Okay, this all looks somewhat familiar. We'll skip past that. Filtering, again, does matter. We're running low on time, so I want to, there, MER was the other thing I wanted to just show us a picture of the screen. Because this one, I can't beat the drum on this enough. And it's the same with FMHD. If you've got FMHD into a poorly tuned filter or poorly tuned antenna or a narrow band channel combiner, your MER starts to get a lot fuzzier. Your spectral display, and it will impact your coverage. Absolutely will. Okay? So something to think about. All right, one more. That's the WW. Oh, one more side note. David, plug your ears. HD2 on AM. We can do it. It can be done. It's been proven it can be done. I'm going to quantify it. So this is something to throw. I am going to throw it out there. So WTLC in Indianapolis got approval from the FCC for an experimental license to turn on HD2 on AM. We can do the technology. The software exists. Oh, the bit rate is atrocious. But if you massage that with a perceptually coded codec for better operation, it's still not. I mean, again, you can't make something out of nothing. But we can do it. Now, the FCC will not, at this point, approve a translator on an HD2 on an AM because right now there is no receiver that can pick up the originating signal. Okay, you can't do a translator for something that there's nothing to translate. But theoretically, you could get an experimental license to light up an HD2, and then at some point, if the receivers came, it'd be something to think about. Now I got David thinking back there. He said, oh, man, you shouldn't be talking about that. This is where I get into trouble when I go back to the office. So there are a lot of things we can look at. But like I said, for AM, the two big things that could potentially help the technology are MDCL for the power bill. Doesn't matter. Analog for that. Here's something else to think about. If you're running MA3, all digital AM, you can't run MDCL. You've got no amplitude component to adjust for. Okay? So it's something else to think about. At that point, just turn the carrier down a little bit. Within the rules, adjust your license accordingly. But yeah, no, let's just turn it down to half power. We can get away with that, right? Again, that mythical agency required to enforce things. All right, any questions, comments, thoughts, criticisms? All of the above. You've got 1 minute and 11 seconds, and Bill is standing by to run to you. Oh, Pat's got his hand up. Mr. Berger, sir.
On this so-called HD2 on AM, what was the bandwidth? Or bit rate, you know, what?
So, what we ended up with was 20 kilobits, which isn't too far off of the MA1 bit rate. So it was, again, it's low bit rate audio. It's not going to be pristine, but it can sound pretty good in the average mobile environment. Would I listen to it on a really good high-end receiver at home? Probably not. David's got his face, the curious, you got a, there's something percolating back there.
Still thinking about the using the HD2 to feed a translator thing, because, and I think you mentioned someone tried to do it and the FCC said you can't because
WTLC put the request
because it's
in.
It's really just an STL in disguise if there's no receivers that can get the signal,
right?
So,
well, and because there are no receivers for it, it violates the law. Like it breaks the law for the purpose of a translator, because a translator is supposed to boost a signal that you can receive in some area.
Right. And that's why they wanted to do it.
Yeah. And I mean, So Dave Colasar put the HD2 up first just to prove it could be done.
Yeah, that's all.
But yeah, TLC actually wanted to put a translator on it. Yeah, Carl.
Just a brief comment on MDCL history. VOA was running MDCL in the 90s at several stations.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I say MDCL is not a new technology. The new transmitter technology has improved our ability to run it, and it's gained a little traction as power bills have gone up. And I saw one more hand right over here. Over, keep going, Steve, over and up. There you go. And we're already over time, but I've never not been over time before. I see no reason to stop now.
This is just a quick question. What is the guess percentage of HD receivers in cars now? It's more of a question probably for David, but.
So that, actually that's an expiry question, but that's very market specific. However, for new cars built, well over half of them have HD receivers in them now, even with all the local recent foo-for-all with GM and Ford. So yeah, over, I don't know the exact percentage, I just know it's over half. Bill's making the get off the stage face. Thank you very much, folks.